How can we live together in peace and harmony? It's difficult to do when we're each hidden in our own secret chamber. And yet, that's the human condition. We are separate minds struggling to find a way not to be alone. How can we speak together when none of us can fully understand another and no one is fully understood? It's so difficult that we have to keep working at it, striving toward a goal we will never reach. But it actually helps when we realize that we can never fully understand each other, because then we can turn our longing for certainty into a longing for harmony. When we accept that we can never fully understand one another, we realize that there is a core of mystery, of ambiguity at the center of all our relationships. Then we can use communication to honor and explore that mystery instead of trying to imagine we could eliminate it. Unfortunately, we live in a culture that's uncomfortable with this mystery, that sees communication as a competitive process where someone's right means someone else's wrong. And America is a communication-challenged culture. We're a country that was born in vigorous debate, but we've lost much of our ability to conduct such discussions. Our national heritage is rich with images of town meetings where people spoke their minds, presented evidence supporting their positions, and were influenced by opposing viewpoints as they struggled to understand one another and decide on a course of action. But America has changed since then. Part of what made this kind of communication possible was a common culture of shared values and beliefs, basically Protestant Christianity. In early America, the church was the center of the community. The public square was its place of decision-making, and government was marginal with a limited role. But things have changed since then. America got bigger, much bigger. And the voices of individuals have largely been drowned out by bigger government and the even louder voices of commerce and special interests. And as the population has grown more and more diverse, the marketplace and government have displaced religion as a central source of value. Many people have realized that the old role of churches had outlived its purpose. There are too many points of view, too many moralities, too many special interests, too many cultures. America is simply too diverse for any one religion or church to claim that it possesses the values that define our society. Many a burgeoning Unitarian Universalist grew up thinking that there was something wrong with their church, as it preached doctrines that seemed to contradict their experience. How many of you looked around when you were a child, if you went to a Christian church, and looked around at people during the Lord's Prayer, people who were saying, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us," when we knew they had absolutely no interest in forgiving anybody? That anger, resentment, and revenge were their real values. And this could get really confusing when we were threatened with eternal damnation and suffering if we didn't accept these doctrines of love. When people who loved us shouted at us in anger for asking questions or disagreeing. When we struggled to find a way to feel good about ourselves in the face of doctrines that said we were inherently evil and that our very thoughts and desires were bad. when they told us we needed to fall down and worship an all-powerful and judgmental God. Many people who became Unitarian Universalists got that way by saying no to something. They rejected harsh judgmentalism of some Christian doctrines. They rejected the hypocrisy that seemed to be such an integral part of their churches. They rejected the religiously based doctrines that supported oppression and segregation. They said no to claims of factual authority based on a set of quasi-historical myths and folktales that were written thousands of years ago. They said no to demeaning theologies that denied their inherent worth and dignity. So, Unitarian Universalists are people who can say no. We protest, we boycott, we disagree. We criticize the dysfunctions and abuses of our culture and our government. The one biblical image with which we seem to identify the most is that of the Old Testament prophets speaking truth to power, denouncing the abuses of the powerful, and calling for mercy and compassion for the downtrodden and disenfranchised. But, as many rebels of the 1960s discovered, it's hard to maintain unity within a movement that's driven by a negative agenda. When we come together to say no, it's difficult to say yes, even to each other. We can end up recreating some of the most intractable conflicts of our childhood churches. Now, many Unitarian Universalists have been wounded for being different. When they come together to form a community where they can feel safe, they want to be free from exclusion and abuse. And freedom from abuse can seem like freedom from criticism. Now, it's easy for Unitarian Universalists to fall into a politically correct tolerance of diversity, where people tolerate differences by not expressing their own, where everyone remains locked in their own separate, secret chamber. But freedom from abuse is not the same thing as freedom from being disagreed with. Disagreement is an essential element of any vital community. Diversity means that people have different ideas and opinions. If they can't express their differences within their community, those differences can become private estrangements, bitternesses, and resentments. When people can't be open with one another, they gradually drift apart. Energy dissipates. Enthusiasm fades. And a once vibrant fellowship can become a lifeless shell. How to manage cohesive harmony within a diverse culture may well be the greatest challenge facing America in the third millennium. Unitarian Universalism has a tremendously important role to play in answering that challenge. Because we have chosen to embrace diversity of opinion and of belief as a central tenet of our faith, we are committed to finding a way to put that diversity into practice. We are the laboratory where the answers to the challenge of the third millennium are being discovered. It's up to us to show the way. Now, mere restraint from argument is not going to get the job done. There will always be people whose emotional investment in an issue is going to override their restraint. And you can end up with a room full of politely restrained people being dominated by the emotionally argued agendas of a small minority. What we need is to learn how to speak to each other. We need to learn how to disagree with each other in ways that can lead to harmony instead of distance. Harmony is a condition where differences come together to create a thing of beauty. When you listen to music, notice each instrument or voice says different things in different ways. Rhythm, pitch, timbre. The result is music, harmony, not unanimity. In order to create harmony, we need to embrace difference. We need to be willing to be disagreed with. We need to recognize that disagreement is not personal attack. The comic strip Dilbert demonstrated this difficulty a while back. A co-worker hands Dilbert a piece of paper, report of some kind, it seems. Dilbert looks at the paper and says, "These numbers look a little bit low." His co-worker immediately responds, "Why are you attacking me?" Now, Dilbert's question could have meant a lot of different things. He could have been wondering about what caused the differences in the figures. It could have meant that last year's numbers were higher, or that he had simply expected them to be higher. He might have been wondering if the same formulas have been used to generate this report. He might have been wondering if some outside factors had affected the year's performance. He might even have wondered if some new competitor had been undermining their market position. We don't know what Dilbert was thinking. Neither did his co-worker. He just said, "These numbers look a little bit low." The other person immediately took it as a personal attack. Now, how can we ever know what people's words and actions mean? After all, we don't have access to that private secret chamber where motivation is known. And if we're honest with ourselves, we have to admit that sometimes we don't even know why we do what we do. We just usually assume that we know what other people mean. We attribute our own meanings to their words and actions. Now, the Dilbert example demonstrates a communication problem that's so commonplace that social psychologists have given it a name. They call it the fundamental attribution error. I like that name. The fundamental attribution error refers to the way we tend to attribute motivation to others, which we would not assume for ourselves. In this case, it's the assumption of intentionality, that the outcome you experience is what the other person intended. Therefore, if you are hurt, the other person was hurtful. Now, Dilbert's co-worker felt injured by what he heard, therefore he assumed that Dilbert intended to be hurtful. Now, this is an error because there can be a million non-hurtful reasons why Dilbert said what he did. But his co-worker assumed the worst. Another barrier to communication is the misunderstanding of the Unitarian Universalist principle of the right of individual conscience. Many people take this to mean that they're entitled to believe anything they believe, anything they want to believe, is true. And this can lead them to think that any disagreement is a personal attack. But the right to hold an opinion is not the same thing as the right not to be disagreed with. Actually, when people with different opinions come together, honest relationship requires that they respectfully differ with one another. Respect doesn't mean silence. Respect means refraining from contempt. It also means refraining from taking offense. When striving to create the beloved community, we need to bear in mind that we add just as much suffering to the world when we take offense as when we give offense. And yet another barrier to effective communication is certainty. Certainty is the same thing as a closed mind. We just give it a different name when we have it. Other people may have closed minds. We are merely certain. But when we are certain about something, we are incapable of engaging in a productive discussion about it. We can only try to convince someone else that they are wrong. Real communication requires that we be willing to be influenced by ideas and opinions that are not our own. And this is one place where Unitarian Universalists can run into trouble. We get to be the way we are because we were unwilling to be influenced by opinions and institutions with which we disagreed. We can identify ourselves as people who say no, who cling to our status as outsiders, who cherish our hurts, who ask of each other not to hurt us further. But if we are going to be a community of faith, we have to begin to heal those hurts together. We have to open our minds and hearts to each other. We need to accept that disagreement does not mean contempt. And we need to learn to disagree with each other without hostility or defensiveness. We need to be kind to one another, especially when we feel hurt or angry. We need to be charitable to each other when we are trying to understand why someone said or did something that may have hurt us. The fundamental attribution error can lead us into a defensive judgmentalism that is as hurtful as anything we came here to escape. So we need to learn to listen to each other, to speak our minds, ask questions, and listen to the answers. It's a kind of a scientific method, you know. We don't just look at something and presume we understand it. Of course, we form hypotheses, opinions about what people mean. We can't presume accuracy unless we test them, verify them. When someone says something or does something you don't like, don't walk away and lick your wounds. Ask them what they meant. You might learn something. And when someone asks you what you mean, don't presume they're attacking you. They may be trying to understand you, to know you, to learn how to be an even better friend. I believe that it's important that those who make up a community of faith take the time to truly listen to one another, and also to have the courage to speak the truth of their lives. This doesn't just apply to our Sunday morning services. If we're to be a vital, living community, we need to have the courage to say what we think and to take responsibility for our positions in public, so that others can ask us what we mean, and so we can learn more about each other's secret chambers. And it's equally important that we open our minds and hearts to hear each other in a way that's not defensive. It takes courage to speak. It also takes courage to listen. And this is the kind of courage this community needs. And this is the example we need to set if we are going to show the way for our culture into the third millennium. Diversity need not mean estrangement. Diversity can lead to peace and harmony if we have the courage to share our differences with one another, with kindness, sympathy, charity, love, and respect. May it be so.